Please welcome Gene Melter.
Thanks, Kirk. Good evening, everyone. Well, I know I've told at least one story here about my colorful father. I do remember telling a story here about one of his cruel practical jokes, the time he recorded the ice cream truck song and then played it out the window so he could watch the little children in the neighborhood come running out with money clutched in their hands, go back in their houses sad and disappointed. And it was that sort of incident that caused him and our family to lose friends and fall out of the good graces of many people. But there was one incident that almost caused him to lose even more than that. So this is the late 70s, and there are 8 kids in my family. My sister Cecilia and I are numbers 7 and 8, and we were teenagers. We were the last 2 left at home with our tired parents, and at this point, our family lived in a house in Granada Hills, which is part of the San Fernando Valley, and this house was located on the corner of a cul-de-sac up high, maybe 15, 20 feet, you know, higher than the street. These details are important. They're totally relevant, so pay attention. And so in a kind of smallish 3-bedroom house, Cecilia's room was in the front of the house nearest the front door, and my room's in the middle of the house, and then my parents in the back of the house. And so it's a summer night, and Cecilia's awakened by a ruckus on the front porch. And when I say porch, it wasn't really porch. It was just the highest step. So you went up maybe 10 steps to get up to the front door, which is a single front door. But it's like a small stage. It's smaller than this, but it's lit up by this bright porch light, so everybody in the neighborhood could see what was going on the porch. So Celia's awakened by a ruckus, and she gets out of bed. She goes to the front door, and she looks through the peephole to see a young man standing there, and he's sort of flailing at the door and saying incoherent stuff, and she realizes that he's quite intoxicated, and she just says through the door, doesn't open the door, you know, she tries to tell him to go away, and he doesn't hear her maybe, or is not paying attention, and he's not going away, and Cecilia doesn't know what she's supposed to do in this situation. So and here are some of the factors she was considering. So our father had a bad temper, and it was all inconsistent. It was totally unpredictable. So would she get in more trouble for waking Dad up and telling him about this, and because he might think it's nothing, or would she get more trouble if he found out about the incident? Maybe something bad happened. The guy did something to the house or some one of us, and she hadn't told him. So she's weighing these, and then she has to weigh in one more factor that we always had to consider with my father. How drunk is Dad? So he'd been drinking all evening as usual, and he'd been drinking continuously for the previous 40 years. So he was just had vodka flowing through his veins, but exactly how drunk was he? So she's weighing everything, and she makes the decision to wake up Dad. She goes in the bedroom, his side of the bed, wakes him up, and he springs into action. He's not very drunk, he's quite alert. And she tells him the situation, and he immediately reaches under the mattress and gets out his gun. Now she regrets her decision, but there's nothing she can do. So he races to the front door, and she's behind him, fretting. Now by this time, I'm awake, and I'm cowering first in my bedroom, and then I move into the hallway. And I'm cowering there. Now, my mother was cowering in her room. She never left her room through this incident because she's lived with this man for 40, 50 years, and she knows how the best way for her to get through an episode is to stay out of it. And maybe she's in denial about what might happen next. So I never see her or hear her, and I'm just creeping around watching, and my poor sister's out there alone trying to handle this. So Dad goes to the front door with his gun in his summer PJs, and he looks through the peephole and he starts yelling at the guy, get off my property. I've got a gun and I'm going to use it. Go away. Get off my property. This sort of thing. And for some reason, this angers this young man. And he starts yelling back. Now, the door's not open. They're yelling through a door. But imagine if you could see this like a split screen or something. You've got a young drunk on one side of a door yelling at a door. And then and an old drunk on the other side. But the old drunk has got a gun. And then you've got Cecilia and her little summer nightie, you know, kind of crouched in the background. Oh. And then me in the hallway, even more kind of mouse-like. And so Cecilia, the young man is not going away. Dad's getting more and more agitated. And so Cecilia makes the second decision of the evening. She decides she should call the police. So she sneaks out into the kitchen, picks up the phone very quietly, whispers to the police, tells them what's happening. But I'm not sure exactly what she described. And I've asked her last week about this. And she couldn't remember exactly what she said to the police. But they came immediately. So in no time at all, there were sirens. And two police cars had arrived and parked in the cul-de-sac. Well, when the young man saw them, he took off down the steps, around the corner, down the street, away from the police. And my dad was so frustrated by this, he opened the door and went out on the porch, and he is yelling at the police officers and pointing at the young man with his gun. He went that way. What's the matter with you? Go after him. Why are you just standing there? Go after him. Well, the police officers are now two cars, four officers. They throw open the doors of the cars, and they crouch behind, they pull their guns. Now there's four officers pointing guns at my father. And I don't know if they could see Cecilia behind him. If so, it looked like a hostage situation, probably. But he's not the least bit intimidated. And I've got to say, this might not be the alcohol. He probably wouldn't be intimidated sober either in this situation. And he's standing there with his gun in his PJs yelling at the officers, "What's the matter with you? You let him go." And they are saying over and over, "Sir, put down your gun. Put your hands in the air." "Why should I do that? I'm not the criminal. You let the criminal go. This is my house. I'm just protecting my family," all the while. And so the police officers are getting more, just tenser, just more, they're just furious. They're frustrated. And they yell at him and yell at him. He yells back. And then finally, they say something that causes him to set down his gun and put his hands in the air, all the while kind of yelling at them and disrespecting them. And they come charging up the steps. And they push him into our living room. And now Cecilia gets out of the way because she knows, we both know, that Dad would not want anyone to witness this, his humiliation. So we're both hiding in the hallway and watching this. And they shove him into one of the wing chair where he enjoyed his cocktails earlier in the evening. And he's sitting in his wing chair, and they are standing over him. Now there's just two of them. The other two have left. And they are berating him and telling him what might have happened and how foolish he was. And then when they get to the point where they say they're thinking of taking his gun away, then he loses it. They don't have a right to do that. He has a right to own a gun. This is America, et cetera, et cetera. And so finally everyone says all they needed to say and calms down, and the police officers leave. And Cecilia can't remember if she got in trouble for that or got blamed for calling the police on our father. But we do remember that he complained to anyone who would listen for weeks after that about how badly he had been treated by the LA Police Department. And he was really angry about it. I'm going to write a letter, this kind of thing. 40-some years later, my mother and father were living in the old folks' home for motion picture people in Los Angeles, movie people, and my father died at the age of 88. And some weeks after the memorial, our sister Alice was helping my mother go through his things. And they're going through his sock drawer, and they find his gun and a box of bullets. Now, of course, you were not allowed to have a gun in the old folks' home, but that sort of rule would never have bothered my father. And my mom was horrified, and she just didn't want to let anybody who worked there know about it in case they'd kick her out, you know? And my sister didn't know anything about guns, and they didn't even want to touch it. You know, what if it was loaded, which was kind of likely. So what should we do? And then they remembered we had, Alice had a childhood friend. It was a friend of the family. It was a family that did not abandon us despite Dad's behavior through all these decades. It was a family that stuck by us. And their son, who was Alice's age, had become a police officer. And he was retired now, and he worked. He owned a pet shop nearby. So they called him at his pet shop, and they told him the situation, and he said, "Don't touch it, I'll be right over." So he comes, and he goes to my mother's little apartment, and he's got a brown paper bag with him, and he puts the gun and the bullets in the bag, and then he takes them away. So my father did have his gun confiscated by the LA police after all. Thank you.